Mr. Morgan, you have 15 minutes. You wish to save any time for rebuttal?
Yes, sir.
Good morning. May it please the court.
How much time would you like to?
Oh, 15 minutes. Oh, I'll see rebuttal.
Okay. You may begin when you're ready.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. May it please the court. I'm Richard Morgan from Harrisonburg. Ms. Merritt and I, we are asking that the court reverse this conviction.
Mr. Morgan, I'm going to ask a question. Did you review the grant order in this case? The order granting the appeal, granting the petition?
Yes, yes.
Okay. It specifically directed the parties to address a decision of this court mm-hmm. in Lawson versus the Commonwealth. Mm-hmm. In the brief that was filed, that you filed in this case, the case isn't mentioned.
Yes, sir.
Given that we ordered you to address it, why didn't you?
I failed in that.
Have you at least read the case?
I'm sorry, I don't remember reading the case, no, sir.
Did you read the Commonwealth's brief about the case?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. What do you think about the case, and how does it apply to the facts of this case?
Your Honor, I apologize. I can't recollect the specifics of that.
Well, let me help you. Lawson is directly on point, as the Commonwealth has realized, because they've essentially conceded error here.
Yes, Your Honor.
Lawson stands for the proposition of failure to appear for a show cause, because it's neither a misdemeanor nor a felony, and it's not a criminal offense, and therefore it's error. It's a non-crime, if you will, and therefore...
Yes, Your Honor.
A failure to appear for a non-crime is not a crime in and of itself.
Yes, Your Honor.
So it's entirely dispositive. You put us, and the reason the court is not very happy with you right now, Mr. Morgan,
yes,
is
sir.
That you have now put us in a rather bizarre situation, because it was not addressed on appeal other than by the Commonwealth. Under our Rule 5A:18, the contemporaneous objection rule, you have to assert the ends of justice exception, which
yes,
would certainly apply here, as the Commonwealth concedes. We don't typically raise these things sua sponte.
In fact, we can.
We have jurisprudence to the contrary. Mm-hmm. So the issue for us, frankly, is whether the Commonwealth conceding the point is enough. Had you raised it, it's a slam dunk winner for you. You chose to ignore the order of the court asking you to address it, which should have been a clue or a signal, because had you simply looked at that case, you to realize that, you know, you're going to have some good news for your client.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not so sure you have good news for your client, because we're now in this situation where we're not sure where we go from here, simply because of the failure on your part to properly represent your client in this case.
Yes,
that's
sir.
The dilemma you presented to us, and that's why we're not very happy with you right now.
Yes, sir.
And let me just point out, just for the future and for purposes, we recognize that as a trial attorney, you're busy, you've got lots going on, you get an order that's a grant order, tells you got your appeal, and, you know, you may file your brief. Obviously, you need to read the orders,
yes,
because
sir.
We add things to the orders.
Mm-hmm.
But assuming that, when the Commonwealth essentially throws up the red flag for you, because they rarely do that, unless there is a legal justification to do it, which the Lawson case presents, you have an opportunity when the Commonwealth files a brief to file a reply brief. And you didn't do that. So that would have given you an opportunity, even if you had failed to, we still wouldn't have been happy. Even if you had failed to do it in the opening brief, you could have done it in the reply brief.
Frankly, it appears to me you didn't even read the Commonwealth's brief prior to coming here today, because you would have realized that they've conceded the point, and you really have nothing really to add, I wouldn't think. Do
yes,
you?
Sir. No, sir.
No.
Thank you.
Mr. Campbell. At the outset, Mr. Campbell, I would like to commend you on behalf of the Attorney and the Attorney General's office. The Commonwealth has behaved exceptionally well in this case, but unfortunately we're going to have some conceding that no crime was committed is the best tradition and the responsibility of the prosecuting authority.
Right.
The problem is we now have some procedural questions that may be difficult for you to answer and may be odd. Yeah. And the first one is, our cases make clear that we cannot raise the ends of justice exception ourselves. Almost all the cases we have regarding the ends of justice exception assume that the appellant is the party that would raise it, because, well, there would be the party that would obtain benefit from raising it. I have been unable to find a single case where we have said one way or the other whether it is sufficient that the Commonwealth has asked us to invoke the ends of justice exception and reach it so that we can reach an issue that we are otherwise precluded from reaching. What is the Commonwealth's position as to whether you raising it is sufficient?
Well, thank you, Your Honor, and thank you for your comments at the beginning. May it please the Court, Aaron Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth. I guess the question is, can the Commonwealth raise the ends of justice exception?
There's no question the Commonwealth can raise the question. Is that good enough for us to then implement?
Is that good enough? And I will also say I have searched in anticipation of this being the question asked by the Court. I have not found a case that says that. The only case I found that deals with the appellee and Rule 518, and I don't have it on my fingertips, but basically it says that the appellee is subject to Rule 518 if they seek to reverse a conviction or a judgment.
It would be helpful if you could submit that to the Court and to opposing counsel after argument so we know what case you're talking about.
Yes, Your Honor, and I may have it printed here. It is Driscoll v. Commonwealth. It's from 1992. It is 14 Virginia App 449. And that's what that.
And just Driscoll's a little bit different.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
I'm just citing the language that says the appellee is subject to Rule 518. That begs the question: Does the appellee also get the benefit of the ends of justice exception under 518?
Well, I'm going to think out loud here, maybe you can comment.
Sure.
It seems to me, I mean, you're in the role, although you don't probably think of this very often, but you're actually standing in the shoes of a prosecutor as you argue this case on appeal because it's a criminal case.
Yeah.
And as a prosecutor, prosecutors have a duty under Berger versus United States to seek the ends of justice, which is what you're doing by making the concession you've made here. And I certainly join Judge Russell in thanking you for doing so, because that is your ethical obligation, and you've honored it very well. So in that vein, it seems to me, if that's your duty to raise it, then maybe it's our duty to at least consider it it seems to be the alternative, and this comes from the Sutton case, it seems to be, where nobody noticed until, oral argument that the crime charge was not the crime convicted of. Mm-hmm. And the remedy there was, because neither party had raised the ends of justice exception, I think we pointed out in a footnote that basically the only remedy left other than a gubernatorial pardon was habeas corpus relief.
Right.
Certainly an option here as well, but that seems to me to not, be something judicial economy or the proper use of judicial resources would favor, when we can dispose of it pretty quickly here as long as it's raised by somebody. Do you see any fault with that analysis?
I do not, and certainly if there was habeas corpus, it would come to me eventually, but... I would rather cut it off right now. We do have an obligation to do justice here, and...
I have another procedural question regarding Rule 5A20, which requires supporting authority for any position that's advanced that would cause us to reverse something. Appellant has produced no authority. Normally, when that happens, your office files, or at least certain members of your office would certainly have filed an argument that the lack of supporting authority requires us to dismiss the brief without even reading it.
Right.
You have not asserted that. I take it the Commonwealth has no interest in asserting that, and it's up to us whether we find that the brief significant enough to strike the brief.
Yes, I've made that argument. I've won on that argument. I just don't think. I looked at this brief. He cites the statutes in one case and did not address Lawson. But
is it fair to say that since the court asked you to address Lawson, you took a signal and you went with the signal and you looked at the case and you said this is just bad?
Yes.
And
well, Lawson is, your position is Lawson's dispositive, so there's no reason to deal with any other equally dispositive analysis. Is that a fair?
Yes, it is. It is directly on point. Failure to appear under 19.2-128 doesn't apply to revocation proceedings, and it's just the bottom line is that the defendant was convicted of something that's not a...
The proper remedy here would have been contempt, a contempt citation.
Right, which is not a misdemeanor. And now she is stuck with a misdemeanor conviction, and that's just not the proper remedy in this situation. And I will say that the prosecutor below agrees with this analysis.
I assume that it was still practice of the office before conceding to check with the prosecutor below and...
And the judge, yes.
Okay.
Well, I'm sure the prosecutor below is thinking, well, you know, I guess anybody can convict them if they actually committed a crime, but if, you know, I can convict them even if they don't, so.
perhaps. But
what does the Commonwealth believe the proper resolution of the case should be? Just an opinion reversing, an opinion memorandum or otherwise reversing the conviction?
Yes, Your Honor.
Does the Commonwealth have any position on whether it should be published or not?
I don't know if I have the authority to...
And don't get cocky. We're not going to ask you again. This is maybe just Judge Russell thinking out loud.
I mean, that may be above my my pay grade. So
We won't hold you to that. Don't answer that question.
I'm going to instruct somebody in another case not to answer her question. That's apparently that's appropriate.
No.
Right. Yeah, I think that's the first time I've had a judge tell me not to answer the other judge's questions. This is a very bizarre case.
No, to be fair, please answer Ken Russell's question.
Yes, no. That's the answer
I can. You don't have a position. That's absolutely fine.
Yes, I don't have a position on that. Unless the court has other questions, I'm sure the court is well aware of the thorny issues that are presented in this case. But the bottom line is we submit that a manifest injustice has resulted and that the court should reverse this conviction.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Morgan, you have time left if you want to use it.
Yes, I would like to thank Mr. Campbell. And thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Consistent with the traditions of the court, we will come